Thanks, Marama. Kia ora. Welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Karen Hay in for Wallace Chapman, who's resting up after a bike accident and a broken wrist. And thanks for your text. Jenny says, pass on best wishes to Wallace and a speedy recovery. Have a friend who did the same thing 2 weeks ago, came off a bike and cannot remember what happened. Very disconcerting. And about our conversation regarding the interminable repetition of vegetable frittatas, but this is about cheese toasties. Sandra says, cheese toastie count approximately 21 and I'm not even in lockdown anymore. Yep, tragic. And Steve, this is for you, Steve, one of our panellists, Steve McCabe. Steve, I'll trade you my level 2 for your level 4. Homemade cooking from 3 home cooks in one household sounds too good. It should probably be illegal.
Like I said before, spoilt rotten.
Spoilt rotten.
Are you putting on weight, Steve, I have to ask?
I it's probably better if I don't answer that question because I might get into trouble.
Yeah, that's another issue, isn't it? And John,
neither confirm nor deny.
Yes, John says, lady said she was totally over cheese toasted sandwiches. I've been making cheese and asparagus toasted sandies for 40 years and I still look forward to eating them. The canned asparagus, not fresh, from John. Our text number here is 2101. Our panellists are Ruwani Pereira and Steve McCabe. And Climate Change Minister and Green Party co-leader James Shaw plans to get on a plane to Glasgow in November to attend this year's United Nations Climate Change Conference, which is known as COP26, which stands for Conference of the Parties Climate Change. And this trip will require MIQ rooms to be set aside for the minister and, I assume, accompanying staff. To talk more about this, we're joined by James Shaw. Kia ora, James.
Kia ora.
Can you please explain why it's important that you attend this conference in Glasgow?
Well, I mean, we are one of almost 200 countries around the world who are signatories to the Paris Agreement. And there are a number of areas where there are kind of areas of the Paris Agreement that haven't got agreement yet, particularly in relation to things that are very important to us, like environmental integrity and transparency. And, you know, we are part of these negotiations on an ongoing basis. And political representation is one of the things that is, you know, important to get these negotiations concluded.
What's the itinerary? And who's going with you?
We usually send a number of experts from MPI, Ministry for the for Primary Industries, for Ministry for the Environment and Foreign Affairs and Trade. These are people who have been involved in different aspects of the negotiations over a number of years.
James, why isn't there a Zoom alternative or an online alternative?
Well, I mean, there are negotiations that occur virtually over time. So, for example, this Wednesday just gone, I was on a negotiation about one aspect of the agreement. There were about, I think, maybe 30 or 40 countries present on that, but not everybody. The negotiations are enormous because they cover so many different aspects of things like, you know, like I said, environmental integrity, things to do with climate finance, timetables and so on. And there are literally thousands of negotiators who are involved in this process.
So when you say negotiators, what does this UN climate conference mean for us, for New Zealand? What will you be negotiating with them? What's going to come out of it for us?
Well, on this one, there are a number of things that are particularly important. As has often been reported, the level of commitment shown by countries to reducing their emissions does not yet equal what is required in order to stop global temperatures from increasing to more than 1.5 degrees. So raising ambition is a very important part of this. Part of this one will be around what we refer to as climate finance. The Paris Agreement really hinged on a deal between the developed world and the developing world, where the developed world was supposed to provide $100 billion a year, US, of finance to support less well-off countries through the transition. Now, that hasn't happened yet, and so that is part of this year's negotiation because, you know, there are areas that are being held up because essentially that level of commitment hasn't yet been reached.
Well, ideologically, isn't plane travel totally out of step with a climate activist? I mean, Greta Thunberg, she stopped flying years ago. I expect she will be going to this, but probably going by train, boat?
Well, I think she sailed across the Atlantic for one of these events previously. That's not really an option for us. You know, we have to get there by the means that are kind of most efficient for us. And so the next best thing that we can do is to offset our travel emissions, which we do.
How are you going to do that?
We buy offsets for our air travel, which is something that I have done for years as a politician. I do that when I travel domestically as well as internationally.
So how many of you are flying?
I think the delegation this time is about a dozen people, roughly.
So a dozen people, that's a group of you. How many MIQ spots will you need on the way back?
Well, we will need as many spots as we send people, but obviously if we can't get MIQ slots, then we won't be going.
What, so you have to get in the queue with everyone else, or do you get any preference as a minister?
No, we have to get in the queue with everybody else, so we are currently working on securing MIQ spots.
So, and just on that subject, are you okay with that, given how many people are after these rooms? You know, if you were just anyone else, you probably wouldn't get a room.
Well, like I said, at the moment, we don't have secured spots. So that does run a risk to our ability to participate in these negotiations.
And a quick question here from a gentleman who calls himself Tractor Man. He says, please ask James why he can't bring one of our diplomats in London up to speed to present his speech and speak for us. That's why we have diplomats.
Well, we are actually using people from our local teams in Europe and in the UK. They will be supplementing it. We're not sending as many people this time as we usually do. And you know, like I said, most of the officials who are going to this are people who are kind of deep subject matter experts in particular aspects of climate change and the negotiations between countries. So we do use local staff where we can. And I'm not going to do a speech. You know, there will be meetings, you know, kind of all day, every day. We generally work about 16 hours a day going to different meetings, most of which are not speeches. So the negotiations are very fluid. There are kind of, if you can imagine, many dozens, if not hundreds of breakout rooms kind of focusing on different aspects, and we kind of move between those. So honestly, if there was a way that we could do this virtually, that would be my preference. But
James,
provided to us.
James Rwani here. You know, just based on the, you know, the poor optics of, you know, the criticism that National got over wanting to be in Parliament and all of that, was it ever an option for you just to say, no, I'll be attending virtually? Was that ever contemplated?
No, it's not an option. It's not an option that's been provided. So, like I said, there have been during the course of the year, you've got to remember this conference has been delayed a year. So this event was supposed to happen 12 months ago and didn't. And in the meantime, there have been hundreds and hundreds of online meetings between different kind of subgroups. But the idea is it culminates at COP26 in Glasgow. And like I said, if we were able to have an event that had as many thousands of people in 200 countries participating in it that could reach a conclusion, if I had the ability to do that virtually, that would certainly be my preference.
James, what happens if you don't go?
Well, if I don't go, then New Zealand won't have political representation at this. You know, we run a risk that some of the things that we consider to be really important, such as, you know, transparency and how countries, you know, meet their commitments in relation to climate change and the Paris Agreement, that the conclusion will be, you know, that we don't get the outcomes that we're looking for.
Are you
sorry,
applying...
James, can I just interrupt for a second? Steve here. Could I ask, do we not have any allies who could speak on our behalf? I mean, you know, potentially the diplomats who are based in London are going to do some some of the Mahifouras. We're going to have other like-minded countries sending delegates. And I'm just looking at comments from your co-leader, Marama Davidson, where she's talking about we should be role models for health advice, not exceptions to it. She's talking about politicians being part of the team of 5 million. She's talking about national enacts selfishly choosing to risk the lives of our far-known communities for political posturing. Does none of that at all apply to you in this instance?
Well, when we said that about, if you was like, me that said that about National Enact, is that there was a perfectly, in fact, there was a superior option to have Parliament online, and that was turned down in favour of having it in person. We don't have an option of having COP online, so it kind of, you know, has to be the people who show up. So the question goes, if we don't go and we ask somebody else to essentially negotiate for us, why would they go?
James, can I just quickly ask you, what's the PM's advice to you about going?
In what sense?
Has she suggested that you should go, that you should fly, that you are you getting a special exemption for MIQ? Does she support you?
She has signed off on the travel, as she does, like she had to sign off on when Damien O'Connor travelled earlier this year for trade negotiations, which at the time nobody objected to. She hasn't said anything to me about whether or not we should get special treatment. I would imagine she would say that we have to get in line like everybody else.
James, thanks very much for joining us on the panel this afternoon.
Thank you.
That's James Shaw, Climate Change Minister. It's 19 minutes past four. Karen Hay on the panel. And time now to dwell on those awkward email moments, the things you wish you could unsend, those accidental reply alls, and the emails that you may have overreacted to or perhaps even misunderstood the person's intent. So do we all need to work on our netiquette, or do some of us get it right? To talk more about this, we're joined by Shelley Davies of Ngāti Wai Iwi and the founder of the School of Unprofessional Writing. Kia ora, Shelley.
Kia ora, Karen. Koutou mā. Great to be here.
You're not so much about keeping it professional as you are about keeping it real.
Yeah, well, it's about modern professional. Our old ideas of professional don't work for people today. It's just a bit outdated now.
So what are the worst things you can do in an email?
In a nutshell, be overly formal, overly professional, because that alienates people. So don't dear me. I'm not your nana. You know, don't kind regards me. When's the last time you said kind regards to an actual human being face-to-face?
Seriously? Hang on. The dear I can get. The dear, I look at that and I think, oh, it's an older person, so it's okay. But the kind regards or even regards, it's very hard to work out how to end an email.
I know, yeah, but how do you end a phone call? Thanks. Talk to you soon. See you later. Appreciate it. Just something really genuine. That's always going to improve tone than those old-fashioned professional kind of phrases that are not natural or authentic anymore.
Well, the one I hate most, I don't know why, is best. Just
here's the
best.
Greetings and sign-offs are really, really subjective. It's hard to get them in a way that will work for anyone. I know that we might have someone British on the panel today, and I'd be interested to know how he signs off his emails if he's angry.
Here you go, Steve.
Well, I'm British, and so we never express our anger. We're very passive aggressive. We keep it bottled up. So we will judge you internally, but you'll never know it.
Would it not be true that I would get a regard, but not a kind regard, because you're that angry at me?
Oh, you'd have to really cross the line for that, wouldn't you? I personally, I usually go with cheers, but you'd know from like the font and possibly the colour.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, some other things that we don't want to do is we don't want to bury the lead or leave the key message to the end of the email, because every reader of emails today is filtering very fast, and we want to know what's the point first and then the context second. So we don't want to leave it at the bottom, and we definitely don't want messy lots of fonts, lots of copied and pasted, or some red and some green and some bold and some italics. We want to keep it clean on the eye.
Let's go back to, what do you mean bury the lead? So it's just basically you just need one line, don't you?
Well, you know, if I want to know when we can have a meeting next week, but you don't know why we need a meeting, then we want to say, hey, can we have a meeting next week first, and then go into here's why. Whereas usually we want to go, hey, I was wondering if we could get together to talk about the blah, 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 when are you free? So we just need to flip that on its head.
What about long emails? Sometimes I look at an email and I think, oh my God, I just can't handle reading this.
No, there's actually some really clear research that says if you've got too many paragraphs and too much solid text, you're going to go, oh, I'll come back to this later. And it's really, you know, what are the odds that you're actually going to come back to it later?
Having said that, I'm guilty of writing them myself.
Yes. There is a mitigating strategy. Sorry, and that's to use headings and bullet points because we can skim read through those really quickly. So we want emails that people can skim. So you can still get a lot of information across and even take people on a journey if they can skim it.
So what do you sign off your emails with, Shelley?
What do I sign off my emails with? Mm. It might be a thanks, it might be a let me know, or quite often it's a hug because it's just me. I'm just running my business.
Hugs.
I don't have to represent anyone else's brand.
Whoa.
Yeah, or the rock on emoji. The rock on emoji works really well. But I've got to tell you, right, so not if you're representing your business, but for me, that works. And so what we know from lots of research is that our emails need to have an authentic voice in terms of the way you as an individual want to interact with other individuals at work.
You know, fair enough.
And I'm a warm, bubbly person.
No, fair enough. But what if have you ever been guilty of sending somebody an email and going, uh-oh, wished I hadn't sent that?
Oh, totally. Yeah, don't ever email when you're angry. Always give it some time for the emotions to settle. Definitely that.
Any advice if you don't follow that advice?
Own it.
Own it.
Own it. Yes. It's the best PR advice, right? If you've made a mistake, we just have to go, I'm sorry, you guys. Look, lockdown or the kids or whatever. I was feeling a bit emotional. I shouldn't have hit send on that. Can we start over?
When you're delivering bad news or maybe a criticism, should you not, you know how you say cut to the chase, but with that, don't you think you should soften it up a little bit? Because, you know, without having those emotional cues through text, isn't it a bit harsher even still?
It's really hard. So to soften, we want to use a real conversational voice. So first of all, we need to think about what words would I use if I was actually speaking to this person, and we want to use those words. We don't want to heighten anything. The second thing is, maybe I'll ask you a question. If I was delivering you the bad news that you didn't get a job that you applied for, would you want me to say, oh, it was a really good application and the quality of applications was really high and we really thought you were good at it? Would you want me to actually soften it before saying, I'm sorry you didn't get the job?
I have to say, a lot of New Zealand businesses don't even bother to get back to you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. That's
very rude.
But no, the recommendation is deliver the bad news first. And if you want to say something kind and warm and encouraging, say it second.
What about emojis?
Emojis are not going anywhere because, as you already mentioned, we haven't got the subtlety of all the cues of tone of voice and body language. So emojis aren't going anywhere. There's actually bodies of research going into how we're using them.
What do you mean they're not going anywhere?
We can't say they're not appropriate for professional writing because too many people are using them for us to be able to unring that bell.
But in a professional sense, it's okay.
Yeah. Look, you don't want like the little smiley poo emoji or anything, but a happy face or a sad face to just get your message across and have a little bit of tone is probably okay.
Sad
I'm not
face.
A fan. And then those emojis that move as well, I'm just kind of questionable.
Yeah.
All right. Well, signing off then. Hugs.
Oh, I'm feeling it. I just feel it. It's so warm.
Kind regards.
Kind regards.
Can I tell listeners if they want to take a course about it? I don't know if I'm allowed to promo my course, but the School of Unprofessional Writing, it's unprofessional.com. And you can learn all kinds of things about what writing looks like today.
Oh, good plug. Shelley Davies, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great name
who
for a school
too. Who
knew
that was even a job? Like, who knew?
Yeah, well, wow. It's a self-made one. Wonderful idea. What about you, Rowani? Have you ever let loose on a keyboard and wish you could take it back?
Yes, quite often. But I find the get it all out there, just kind of vomit on the page and then keep like editing until you send it. So don't send it. But it's quite good to get it off your chest, I think, in the full throes of how you're feeling, and then yeah, but very hard when you're dealing with, say, government departments, or, you know, when we're, you know, quite often for work dealing with more confrontational things, how to word those, you know, it's very, yeah. It's an art, that's for sure.
I think a good idea is to not put the person's email address in first, just in case you accidentally send
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Oh, no, absolutely. It's just a blank one, no recipient in there. Yeah.
Leave that blank.
And be extremely careful who you're addressing it to. Many years ago, I wrote a very, very disparaging and snarky email about a colleague to another colleague. And I don't know how I managed to do this. To this day, I don't know what went wrong, but I managed to mistype a second recipient's name and put his wife's email address in there instead. And she worked at the same school.
My goodness.
I was sitting there at lunch having a cup of tea, and suddenly the wife sort of stormed into the staff room, marched straight over to me, thinking, what's going on? And she absolutely ripped me to pieces. And it took me ages to figure out how the hell she knew.
And then, dot, 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 what happened?
Well, eventually I went back and reread the email and just like quietly, I wanted to crawl into the ground and die. It was very, very embarrassing.
You moved to New Zealand then, wasn't it, Steve?
Actually, oddly enough, that was in New Zealand. But there's nowhere left for me to go now.
Listening. That couple are probably listening now to that story.
I am very carefully avoiding naming names of people or workplaces.
This is a text from Sigrid who says, I have to disagree with the speaker on not using kind regards. I'm an older person and find kind regards with any professional or business email most appropriate. I dislike cheers. That doesn't mean anything to me.
Oh, well, that's every single email I've written in the last year suddenly devalued.
Yes, Janet says, Ngā mihi is an easy, kind, inclusive email sign-off.
Exactly. The kia ora and the Ngā mihi gets you through all that. It's genuine. It's our language. And that is a nice way of ending off, I think, an email.
And My
wife's people are American. I've lived among Americans for years, and I don't know what happened, but I actually signed off an email recently, Ngā mihi y'all, and I still don't know what I was thinking.
Ngā mihi y'all.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know whether I should be very, very proud or deeply ashamed. A little bit of both, I think, to be honest.
A bit of both. Steve McCabe and Ruwani Pereira, guests on the panel. We'll be back after the headlines.